and I'm pretty sure you showed up to the call and you had just been like physically attacked outside an abortion clinic. How does that happen?
It's time for Dear Jane. I'm Scott. She's Marcy. Hello. How are you?
I'm good.
So you've been in the pro-life movement for how long?
Since 2013.
All right. So that's 12 years. Mm-hmm. I've been off and on for, I don't know, many years. I don't know, enough to where I couldn't do the math. There are just some people in the movement you need to know, mm-hmm. right? I mean, there's just some names. It's like, do you know so-and-so? Oh, yeah. And I think it's good to check in with those folks every once in a while just to see, you know, how are things going? How is the movement improving in your eyes? That sort of thing. And that's what we're going to do today.
Yeah, I am excited for people to hear from Brian Gibson. He's the CEO of Pro-Life Action Ministries and president of PLAM Action, which does a little bit more political advocacy. We've known Brian for a while now, and he's just a wealth of information on the movement, how it's changed over the years, ways that it's gotten better, areas where things can still be improved. He's definitely one of those guys I look up to. He's been doing this for longer than I've been alive. So he knows his stuff.
He's got punched in the nose for it a time or two.
Yeah, he did. And he's just very nonchalant about that. You guys are going to love him. I think you'll be inspired and entertained by some of his stories and just his experience in the movement.
Yep. One of our favorites in the movement. It's Brian Gibson from Pro-Life Action Ministries today on Dear Jane. If you've been in the pro-life movement for any amount of time, there are just some people you need to know. Brian Gibson is one of those people. He is with Pro-Life Action Ministries in now Minnesota and Florida. Anywhere else, Brian, that you've got PLAM influencing people these days?
Well, as far as actual offices, it's just Florida and Minnesota, yes.
Okay. All right. And how long have you been in the movement? Long enough
forever.
To have to think about it. Yeah.
Forever. Well, okay. So officially, I began volunteering for Pro-Life Action Ministries in 1981.
Okay.
And I started full-time in 1986.
All right.
So that gives you an idea.
So in that many number of years, which Marcy's going to count those up for us while we... So how have things changed in the movement for someone who's being active? How would you describe the evolution of things as being a pro-life advocate in that time?
Oh my goodness, that's a big question. So much has changed in so many different ways. Well, first of all, it's probably good as a reference point, the end of the movement we're in that I lead. So the work that we're doing is sidewalk counseling and prayer outside abortion facilities. Almost 98-99% of our work is doing that. So that's our active work. Is we call it direct action. It's being out there trying to save babies from being killed immediately, right now, ones that are scheduled to die. And we do it through prayer, and we do it through very well-trained volunteers who sidewalk counsel. So we got this extensive sidewalk counseling program. How's it all changed? And I've watched the whole movement, politically, education-wise, pregnancy help centers growing and stuff. Back when we first started in those early years, there wasn't a lot of attention on the abortion issue in the public realm and as well as within the churches. So, you know, what I've watched happen is the very extensive growth, especially within the churches, of starting to get involved. There's a long way to go yet. Don't get me wrong. A long way to go. But it's so much more than it ever was back in those early years. Now, we also did, in those early years, we were doing things that are now federally and in Minnesota state illegal felonies now. I guess they're felonies. The FACE Act, federally, we have a FACE Act in Minnesota as well. So we were actually peacefully and prayerfully blocking access to the abortion facilities intentionally. and hundreds of people joined in doing it here in Minnesota. Thousands and tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands across the United States back by the late 80s, early 90s. And so there was a big influx of involvement then. But then after the FACE Acts got passed and some other things happened, we saw a waning that took place for a while until in the between 2000 and 2010, we started seeing this new involvement coming from this newly designed concept of prayer outside abortion facilities called 40 Days for Life. And so that also now, by 2012, 2015, we were seeing a very large involvement with that as well, growing and growing and growing. We actually here in Minnesota were able to get the first hospital abortion facility to close doing 40 Days for Life activities. So we were involved in that. We have another abortion facility that just closed December 31st and with lots of prayer out there over decades. So all that going on. And maybe one good one to look at is our Good Friday prayer vigil. So now we've been doing this prayer vigil since 1984. It's an all-day prayer vigil. We bring out a life-size cross. We tell people not to bring signs because we're going to pray all day. We have 15 pastors. We get 15 area pastors. We work interdenominationally, so of all various denominations, we get them to come, and they lead scripture and prayer, one each half hour throughout the entire day. And so we spend the whole day praying next to Planned Parenthood in St. Paul. Now, before they moved to their current location, we were doing it on the street in front of Planned Parenthood in St. Paul. And I believe by the late 1990s, we were counting more than 1,000 people showing up during the day. By the end of the early 2000s, by 2010, we were counting more than 2,000 people showing up throughout the day. And by 2019, we counted 3,800 people showing up throughout the day. So you can see just right there, you see the growth right there with people willing to be bold and to be involved and to get active. But that's us. I mean, when we first started, I could count all the pregnancy help centers in the entire state of Minnesota probably on one hand, maybe one and a half. Today, I'm not even certain how many they are. There are so many. Just in our metro area, it's probably close to 40 pregnancy help centers in our greater metro area. And then there are many more throughout the state and, of course, in the adjoining states all around us. So the growth of the pregnancy help center movement has been amazing. Politically, wow. I mean, there are so many things that have developed. It's been up and down throughout the years. But, you know, Roe v. Wade got overturned. That's a biggie. And now working and trying to make abortion illegal throughout other states and throughout the United States is the new challenge that's taking place. But, you know, would I have thought I would have seen this all developed 30 years ago, 35 years ago? I'm not so sure I would have seen it that way at all.
Yeah. You live in and do work in a tough state politically when it comes to abortion, one that maybe more people learned about during the last election cycle with Governor Walz having more prominence. What is that like, and how do you stay encouraged in your pro-life work, just knowing, tell us kind of how dark it is in Minnesota and how do you stay encouraged through that?
Well, the first of all, post Roe, the Dobbs decision came down in July, beginning of July, late June 2022. And so the next election, which was that November, the Republican Party, which tends to be mostly pro-life, lost the state house. I believe it was the house that they lost. Maybe that was both the House and the Senate they lost at that time. But we ended up with what we called the Democrat Farmer Labor Party, which is our Democrat Party in Minnesota, DFL. And they ended up getting the majority in both our Senate and our House. They already had, you already know the governor we had. And So in the January 2023 legislative session, which began in early January, they just pushed through in an extraordinary manner, faster than ever seen before, one piece of legislation that created abortion as a legal right in the state of Minnesota. Then they went on to start picking apart all the reasonable pro-life measures that had been passed during the time you couldn't pass pro-life laws without trying to get it past the U.S. Supreme Court with Roe v. Wade. We had all these, we had things going all the way back to 1974 that these guys just decimated and took out. And going so far as to actually rewrite our infant, what is the name of it? I'm going to try and remember the name exactly as it is, but it's our Babies Born Alive Act that we have in Minnesota. If they're born alive during an abortion procedure, the law had been written. There were two very important things that were in the law. One was they had to be reported to the state, so we'd get to see how many of these were taking place each year. And the second thing was is that physicians needed to be on hand if it were late enough in pregnancy. A physician would have to be on hand who was not the abortionist, who would be the physician for the baby. And then in his or her judgment, if that baby was viable or far enough along to be cared for as would normally be done for another baby that same gestational age at birth, would then be required to be cared for by law. Well, they took the required to be cared for stuff out entirely. They make it now that we just leave the babies, they call it comfort care, but just leave the baby to die exposed. And they took out the reporting, so we no longer see that these late-term abortions are taking place and babies are born alive in them. So that's where we ended up being. They did try to pass put a constitutional amendment out. They didn't get that before through the legislature, thankfully, this past legislative session. But it's you know, we added new laws that welcome women to come have abortions to Minnesota. We added new laws that protect abortionists from being prosecuted. If they're being prosecuted in another state, they can come and hide out in Minnesota and so forth. So it's a tough place to be when it comes to, we've seen a 40% increase in the number of abortions in 2 years. So it's, you know, we've been watching numbers go down and go down, and all of a sudden, boom, they shoot up. But we also see a lot of license plates from other states at our abortion facilities all the time. And now we have an abortion organization that we see new in the reports this year that isn't even in Minnesota. They're doing mail order chemical abortions. So it's the landscape is just very difficult, but by God's grace, we're out there on the sidewalks. Babies' lives are being saved still. We're winning in some ways that the city of Minneapolis passed an ordinance banning us from going up to automobiles when they drive into Planned Parenthood and giving a little bubble zone thing out there. Well, we won that case in federal court. Okay. The very first day we could be out there, a baby was saved.
Wow.
So it's just cool as can be with that. And then the longest, oldest running abortion facility in the state of Minnesota closed on December 31st. Mm. And we've been going there for as long as I can remember, 39 years, 40 years.
Wow.
So, So I think, you know, that's what keeps you encouraged. You have the opportunity to help and save lives and do good, and that's always encouraging.
You mentioned that bill that when the Democrats took over in January 23, both chambers, because I've cited this example to people around the country, not only was it a high priority bill, it was bill number one, as in the number one priority. Above all other things that they could focus on, they wanted to make sure that they had unlimited, unrestricted abortion in Minnesota. So that kind of speaks to where their priorities are. As it happens just today, I happen to read that your governor, Tim Walz, wants to run for president. Just how bad is this guy?
Well, he's, I don't know if you can describe how bad his positions and policies and personality are. I mean, it's, you know, if you didn't see him on the camp in the campaign things during this past election cycle with him running as the VP, if Kamala Harris did not lose of her own accord, Tim Walz is the reason she lost, because he was horrible. And you know, I guess Minnesotans didn't find out how bad this man was until he was running for vice president, because the national media started covering things about him that our state and local media have hidden from and have shielded him about. So it's just, you know, his whole thing about, we call it stolen valor, when he was claiming to have attained a higher rank than he did when he was in the National Guard. He called at one point just before the riots broke out in Minneapolis in 2020 after George Floyd was killed. When the mayor of Minneapolis asked for the National Guard to come and help protect the city, his response was, "They're just a bunch of cooks. You don't want them." You know, this is a guy that was a National Guard guy trying to claim higher rank than he got. You know, and so that's, you know, he had all sorts of things. He claimed he was in China when Tiananmen Square happened, and he wasn't. He got confronted for that in the national media. Again, think one thing after another after another. He is not liberal. He is a leftist. Classic liberalism actually is a fairly good thing. I know we don't think that way nowadays because of the way politics have gotten, but, you know, this man is a leftist, a hard leftist. And, you know, it's not a pretty picture if he ends up winning even re-election as governor in Minnesota.
One of the things that I saw that he did was he stripped away funding for that had been in place for pregnancy help centers. How has that impacted things there, as far as you could tell, for the PHCs?
Well, there were several centers that actually were receiving a fairly sizable portion of their annual budget because of this program. And so it caused them to have to cut staffing and programs. They virtually had to cut staffing and programming. But the pregnancy resource centers are seriously under fire in Minnesota, not just from Governor Walz and the legislature, but from Keith Ellison, our attorney general. And he actually took a radical pro-abortion group's assessment of pregnancy help centers and used it as his reasoning to create a consumer alert against pregnancy help centers in the state, and then set up a hotline to receive complaints about the pregnancy help centers, which we did ask for basically a Minnesota version of a freedom of access of information request, and found that so far I don't believe they've had any complaints at all. So not even fake ones. So it's but that's just part of the atmosphere we're dealing with right now.
Brian, I remember we were on a call with you at one point last year. And I'm pretty sure you showed up to the call and you had just been like physically attacked outside an abortion clinic. How does that happen? If you work for, maybe run a pro-life advocacy group and are interested in learning more about how you might be able to utilize this in a campaign, you really need to talk to our friends at Cogency Strategic. They have been running campaigns to, in as respectful a way as possible, show people the reality of abortion throughout time, throughout history. We have utilized the images of victims, the stories of victims, to really show people human injustices. And that is what kind of turns the corner and helps them decide to act and decide we don't want to tolerate this injustice anymore. So if you're curious about how that can work in your advocacy, check out our friends at Cogency Strategic, cogencystrategic.com. They can help you get set up and just talk you through how you might be able to use this in your area of influence within the pro-life movement.
Well, that call might have been a couple days after the day because I don't think I was doing much that afternoon. So, yes, I was. I have been punched a couple times out in front of an abortion facility. And just for everybody to know, I'm safe. There's no harm done. I mean, you know, I'm not scared. I've not been scared. You know, it's just something that can happen once in a while. It's almost always a boyfriend or husband, whichever the case might be. It's the father of the baby being killed. Mm-hmm. And, they're, you know, I'm not sure if the situation is that they don't like the fact that somebody's trying to talk their woman out of having their baby killed because they're the ones that are the driving force behind this abortion, or if it's they just think that they're being some sort of protector finally, even though they're failing and miserably in their role to really protect their family. Mm-hmm. They somehow might think they're protecting. So, but it, you know, the last time I got hit, the one you're talking about, Marcy, it just so happened he clipped my sunglasses and the sunglasses went into my skin and cut the skin. I'm older, so it cuts easier. And of course, face will bleed a lot. So it looked worse, way worse than it looked cool. Scott, it looked cool. You should have seen it. I mean, so I'm at we call the police right away. The police come and, you know, we're trying to get this worked out. And of course, I wear this construction fluorescent, my son calls it highlighter yellow coat. For safety, so I don't get run over or I don't, you know, things like that. So I got this bright coat on, and I can be seen to hand out literature and talk to the women, and there's blood down the front of it. So the officers ask me if I need to be looked at by, have some EMT guy come by and look at me and stuff. Nah, no big deal. I didn't even feel it. And I could feel that it was trickling a little bit, but I didn't feel any pain from it. So I get back to my car when it's time to leave, and I look at my rearview mirror, and I see myself for the first time like this, and I'm going, you know, I think I better go to the hospital. So I drove myself over to the emergency room of a local hospital, and, man, they were quick to take me in because I looked so good. But, again, I didn't even feel any pain at all. It didn't hurt at all. Mm-hmm. Or anything. So, you know, sometimes it happens.
You know, it's interesting. If you had, so you say it's the boyfriends and the fathers. I guess that surprises me a little bit because I would think if I had to stereotype the antagonists to folks like that are out there just praying and peacefully helping, it's these screaming Karens, for lack of a better, you know, these blue-haired liberal women who like to just scream. I would think they would be a more of a thorn in your side than, because in my mind, again, and I just, you know, I love having these conversations because I learn more and more. A lot of times my understanding is, you know, women have to go to these centers by themselves or things of that nature. I guess I am a little surprised to hear that, number one, the men are there, and two, that they're really that aggressive about it.
Well, okay. Well, we're talking about three times in 12, 13 years.
Okay.
Out of the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times I've been out there. Okay. So let's really, I mean, yeah. I'm not trying to minimize what happened. It is minimized. It wasn't that much. So I mean, it's fairly safe to be out there on the sidewalk. Now, as far as the screaming individuals, I will not call them Karens because I've got a sister-in-law named Karen and I love her a lot. And I think that's a horrible thing to call somebody just because somebody said that one time. But the people that come out and they're antagonistic, they're pro-abort, they think they're doing some sort of great good in trying to yell at us. They think maybe if they scream loud enough or say the right words, we'll suddenly realize we shouldn't be doing what we're doing and start crying and run away. I don't know, but yeah, they're out there and that's more of the regular thing you see. You know, I can't count how many times I've been called number one with the wrong finger. You know, and I can't tell you how many times I've been told to go get a job or something or whatever else it might be. But those are usually drive-bys. That's most common, a drive-by thing. Once in a while, somebody will be bold enough and try and steal a sign we have. Police have been really good in most of our jurisdictions to follow up on anything where there's a threat of an assault or any stealing or of our materials or anything like that. They've been pretty good about dealing with those issues over the years.
There's been a shift in the pro-life movement the last few years that I've been aware of to, in as respectful way as possible, utilize abortion victim imagery in our advocacy efforts to shine a light for people on the reality of abortion and what abortion actually is. What has your experience been with that? And in your experience, is it effective?
Well, first of all, there's been two or three shifts over the years. So I can remember when the use of the photos of aborted babies were used extensively. Mm-hmm. Outside abortion facilities in particular, sometimes throughout the community. Then that kind of shied away for a good while. And now I think in this era being used a little more judiciously, a little more thoughtful in how they're being presented. I think, and that's what it really comes down to me, for me, Marcy, is that we have to be thoughtful, but they still need to be used. There's where I really fall on this. You know, they're the ones that are being killed, not us, not the moms, not the dads. It's the babies that are being killed. And, they're the ones that are suffering. They're the ones being torn apart. They're the ones being thrown away. They're the ones going down the toilets, all those things. And there's something about all throughout history, anytime there's been a serious human rights violation taking place, it's seeing the victims that gets the public to realize how wrong it is. Mm-hmm. You know, when Martin Luther King and others in the civil rights movement were marching, and we saw the police come out with their batons and their dogs and their water cannons and just started beating on peaceful people because they're marching across a bridge or trying to sit at the counter or sit on a bus in a different seat than they were told they were allowed to, things like that, it enraged the public and it caused that a change to happen. The whole story of what happened in Britain with the ending of slavery, it was, you know, being brought out there by Wilberforce and seeing the slaves in these slave ships that did something like that. We get shocked when we see the evil. And the evil is always done against the victim. It's not me. It's not the person standing up for them even. It's the victim themselves. So there is a very important place for seeing the images of the babies that have been killed by abortion in the public light somewhere.
So this, of course, has to do with communicating and changing hearts and minds, things of that nature. What, in your time in the movement, what do we do better as a movement than we did maybe 15, 20 years ago? And then at the same time, what do you wish we would do better? Where have we improved and where do we still need to improve?
I think the one very clear area of improvement, Scott, has been where the various pro-life organizations, this is a very grassroots movement. You know, there's no top leadership out there that you can really point to in this movement. You know, we could look to a Martin Luther King Jr. You know, we could look to, you know, different people in different movements at different times. This one, it's hard to pinpoint. Who's the leader of the pro-life movement? Well, who are the 10 leaders of pro-life? You can't even do that. It's so diverse and so flat in its layout. So, but what I've seen happen, though, in the past 10, 15 years is that the people who are in leadership of this great array of organizations and different facets of the movement actually getting together and communicating more and looking at, you know, how can we work together? How can we complement each other's work? How can we be more unified in our efforts? So that's been a very good thing. And maybe the second thing is, and this has come with the rise of social media, the internet and social media, is being able to communicate digitally. And you guys are in the middle of it, and I'm grateful for your organization because, the communication, being able to reach out to people that we could never reach out to before. We wouldn't even know how to find them to reach out to them, and now we are. And so there's something very good in that area. What could we do better? Well, the very thing I just pointed out as being so much better as far as coming together and working better and being a little more unified, we need to be a whole lot better unified. Being able to even come up with the ability not to criticize each other outside of maybe a room where we're together alone would be very helpful. But it seems like, much like you see, this is like a microcosm of the Christian church. You know, there are two things we love to do in Christianity. We love to pat each other on the back and call each other brother and sister, and we love to take out our knife and stab each other in the back and say, you're all wrong. So you don't do it my way, so therefore you can't be right in anything you do whatsoever. So you get a little of that as well in there and so forth. And so I think there's a lot. This communicating to the public, you know, we've been hamstrung in some location, in some ways. And working around those things has become vital to communicate at all. And that still is a thing to learn how to continue to get better at working around and get the message past the gatekeepers that don't want the pro-life message to be seen, which mainstream media, shame on them, every one of them, for being pro-abortion. You know, the politicians, especially the pro-abortion politicians who are so nasty in what they say and do, those areas we still need to figure out how to get better at getting around.
Yeah, I agree. You know, we always get hung up on the money advantage the other side has and, you know, all of these sorts of things. Just imagine if we started working together in a complementary fashion, what we would be able to accomplish as a movement and bridging some of those gaps. They're always going to be there. That's one of the things that has always surprised me coming into the movement is just the whispers, you know, it's like you said, well, we do it better than they do, or, you know, they're just not doing it right. Or, you know, they're not seeking the right goals. You know, they're not as aggressive or whatever it might be. You know, you've got all this going, and it is, boy, what I had never thought of it. It is just like churches. I mean, it's just, you know, my church, we're all going to heaven. Your church, boy, you guys aren't going to be there. It's crazy how bad it can get. Yeah. And it's counterproductive, to say the least.
And you see the same thing within a church.
Yeah.
I mean, you can be within one denomination and see all the splintering and stuff going on. And so it's part of the human condition. We got to admit that. It's just simply part of it. We need to learn to work with it. Long ago, one of my staff members I had back in the through the 80s and into the early 1990s, Tim, he would like to talk about how we need to get along. And his comment is that, you know, don't offend people easily. And don't be easily offended. And I've taken that adage and have applied it all the time. You know, when somebody says something negative about me, am I going to get all feathered up and get angry and stop doing what I'm doing for a moment, even for a moment, to try and deal with this person that's saying something negative about me? Or am I going to say, hey, I'm just trying to do what I'm supposed to do. I make mistakes, but I'm going to keep going. You know, and not worry about it. So, you know, sometimes that's what we need to have is have a better, just a better attitude with each other when it comes to, you know, being offended or offending.
Yep. Wise words indeed. PLAM.org, PLAM.org, Pro-Life Action Ministries. If you want to find out more about what Brian's doing in Minnesota and Florida, we've been wanting to talk to you for a while, so just appreciate the time coming on with us and sort of doing a state of the movement discussion like we like to do from time to time. So thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Marissa.
Thanks again for listening to Dear Jane.
You can follow along every day on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and X. And make sure you also are subscribed so you never miss an episode on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, as well as YouTube. Ring that bell so you're notified and you never miss an episode.